everybody. So here we are once again in Spieth. It really has been a wonderful week, what with the interviews with Mr. Bruce Marks and Mr. Bob Agee and all these representatives who are coming from the United States. It's something that's certainly important to see. I had an opportunity to talk to some of the Iranian officials this morning as well, and they say they want to reach out. They say they have some news on the negotiations front that we'll be happy to share with you as well. Millions of you have been watching, and we're very, very appreciative of that. It's so nice that you guys have been watching the show, and you've also been commenting. And it's interesting because I read much of what you write, whether it's on X or on YouTube or all the other socials. And many of you over the past week have been saying, Rick, did you hear? Candace Owens is in Russia. And I said, yes, I've heard Candace Owens is in Russia. So thousands of people have been writing to me to tell me that, because they know I'm here, to tell me that Candace Owens is in Russia. And it would be a great opportunity to be able to reach out to Candace and see if she's gracious enough to want to sit down and talk to us. And lo and behold, I present to you, ladies and gentlemen, Candace Owens, who's come and decided to talk. It's so great to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome, fellow Americans, to Russia.
Yes.
So what are your impressions, first of all?
I mean, I've just been stunned by the beauty. I have not yet been able to run around St. Petersburg because we just got in yesterday.
Yeah.
But I was in Moscow, and Moscow was positively stunning. It defied... I didn't really have any expectations, but if I had any, they would have been defied by just how clean, how safe, how beautiful, how historic the city is. I wish I had spent more time, to be honest with you.
Its beauty magnifies the frustration that we as Americans bring in our hearts and in our minds, which we've been programmed to think, isn't it?
I totally agree with you. Frustration is the right word, because I was experiencing that, where I was asking myself, why? Like, why can't we be told that this is a lovely, beautiful, safe city? Especially as a Christian, I think that frustration is magnified because there's so much wonderful Christian heritage in Moscow, and it's beautiful for us to be able to see it.
As you probably know, I was born in Cuba and came to the United States. So I was trained, indoctrinated, maybe is a better word, to distrust Russians, even to hate Russia. And that's a silly thing that we create. And it's our own media. I worked at CNN, as well as Fox and NBC. And I was not just trained to believe that. I was trained to teach that.
Yes, without question. I always call it the Cold War hangover, where there's not really an explanation, but they just sort of tell you Russia is a no-no and a no-go. And you, as obviously I'm at an age now where I have to have experiences. I don't just trust the media, because if I did, I wouldn't trust myself. Look at what they say about me, the lies they tell about me. And so I do think that we're in this sort of unique dynamic right now, where they've told so many verifiable lies over the last, even this last 5 years, that they've just fractured the trust that the American people have in them. And so I'm very happy for that, because I think it allows us to sort of think more rationally, independently, and to experience more of the world.
You know what's interesting? Obviously, people like you and I, we are reading the news and headlines all the time, because this is what we live off of. And there's a couple of big stories that have happened here. A week and a half ago in Lugansk, there was a school that was essentially bombed by Ukraine. Many would say with the help. In fact, I was talking to Maria Zakharova yesterday. She's the spokesperson, or spokeswoman, as she says, for the foreign ministry. And she blames in many ways our government, and she blames the Europeans and NATO, et cetera. But my point is this. So a couple of weeks ago, some 21 students were killed when they were hit with a bomb in their dormitory and it collapsed. Many of them were children. They were underage. Yesterday, a bus was hit in Donetsk, and I think something like 8 people died. But it's a commuter bus. It's just civilians or people going to work. So these two things happened. So I immediately checked the BBC and I checked CNN, Candace, as we often do. Nothing. They're writing more, and somewhat angrily, about you being here than about dead children.
Yeah, and I think that overall is what's contributing in this fracture in trust that the American people have in the media, is they're seeing that they are exaggerating certain events in many ways, and then they minimize things that shouldn't be minimized. And so it doesn't serve the media to do it. So I'm unsure why they keep doing it. And people don't believe you as it is. So maybe try to commit yourself to a little bit of truth once in a while, but they just seem completely uninterested in it. Maybe because propaganda has always worked,
yes,
and they have been able to move people in certain directions, and it has been enough to just smear someone and call them, as I've been this week, funded by the Kremlin.
Wait, a Putin propagandist,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe that's just they are an old dog that can't learn a new trick.
Yeah.
But certainly, I think independent podcasters and people that are independent media are benefiting from that lack of trust. So I don't hate it.
Seriously. I mean, we're grateful to you, and people around the world are grateful to you, and to Tucker, and to so many others out there who are being brave enough to say the stories that unfortunately CNN and Fox and these people won't say. And it's not about, you know, necessarily giving overtures to Russia. Russia makes mistakes too. Russia screws up. Russia does bad things just like any other country does. The question is, do you call it fairly, like a good umpire or a good referee? Americans don't know that Volodymyr Zelensky's not even elected. They don't know that. They don't know, for example, how this war actually began. They don't know about what I just told you, these students who have been hit. So I think what people like you and I think, or at least certainly what I think, is it's not about being one-sided. It's about telling the story fully. And that's what they don't do.
I think what's become increasingly more frustrating is that they don't even think they need to articulate a reason for this is why you shouldn't like Russia, or this is why you should like Ukraine. They've become, in their own minds, so powerful that it's just a dictation. Like, if this is, we are telling you by creed that you should believe this and you should believe that, and we don't feel like it requires any further explanation. And that's no longer working. It may have served in older generations. It's certainly not working amongst the youth. And the more that they try to constrict and to control, the more that they lose a hold of the American mindset.
How did you get to this place? I mean, the more I read about you, the more fascinated I am. I mean, you worked with Charlie Kirk. You were in alternative media, but then you branched off. I think they got rid of you the way they got rid of me.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get to this place?
Well, just by living it. So it's very easy for me to accept that they're lying when they lie about me. Every single article that is written about me is, it's fiction. I don't even respond, really. I always respond with humor. Or I would kind of make fun of them when they ask questions now.
Yeah.
I don't take them seriously enough to dignify half the things that they're saying with a response. That's a great place to be. It's like watching a cartoon. I tell them, write what to your heart's content, right?
Yeah.
View it as a creative writing exercise, because you guys have no interest in what the truth is. It would have sufficed to just say, Candace is going to Russia on a family vacation, and while she's there, she's going to be speaking on the topic of family at Spieth.
Yeah.
They just can't do it. They fall short every single time, and it becomes like the mythology behind Russia. And even though last week they were saying I was funded by Iran, the week before that I was funded by Qatar, absent any proof. Again, they don't have to articulate, they don't have to show any proof, they just have to say it, and I think it's going to be enough, even though it has been proven time and time again that's not enough, and that it's only catalyzing their demise. They just can't learn a new trick.
Yeah, and even if you were, let's suppose, because you know it's funny, let's suppose you take a speaking engagement in Paris or in the UK.
I have.
Then it's like, oh my God, you're so wonderful.
Nobody cares.
No,
I've spoken to Japanese press. I met with Viktor Orban. I was in Hungary. It doesn't even warrant a headline.
Yeah.
I have been a part of a lot of stuff. Obviously, my husband is British in the UK. I met him at a political event in the UK.
Yeah.
Nobody cares about anything. And if they went back in my history, they would see so many family vacations where, of course, while you're there, you're like, oh, you know, could I do something on this day and meet somebody? That's totally normal and should be expected. But for whatever reason, I think this has been the most triggering trip for the mainstream media. And it has been laughable to see the headlines they're coming up with. I mean, I had one person saying that my husband, we were in Italy on a family on a family trip a few weeks ago, and that was another conspiracy, that there was like a Vatican fleeing money. I mean, totally wacky. But they said that my husband met with Alexander Dugin in Italy. I mean, it's totally so far removed from reality. And again, I don't mind it because it only harms them. So
when people ask me why I go to places where oftentimes journalists don't go, why I recently went to China, why I interviewed Lukashenko, a dictator, or sit down and have meetings with Mr. Putin and Mr. Lavrov, you know, who are Russians, I tell them it's because I believe in God. And we have been taught as Christians that you're supposed to talk to each other. You're supposed to understand your neighbor, even if you don't like him, even if you disagree with him. I don't understand how our country, of all countries, would be pushing something, these principles upon us, where we're not supposed to talk to people if somebody has decided they're not good. It seems ungodly to me.
Well, they are a pro speaking to people so long as it happens within their orbit and their controlled narratives and within their mainstream media apparatus. They don't like independent people going out to speak because they know that it can fall outside of their narratives typically, because there's a more genuine pursuit of truth and understanding. And it's hard to reflect. People don't remember because there's so many lies that were told. But at the beginning of the conflict with Ukraine, when I say they didn't even bother to articulate a reason, they were saying, like, basically that Vladimir Putin was sick and he had gone crazy and deranged. That was it. That was all we got. And so I had
and they're still saying that.
They kind of moved away from it because it was supposed to be like an imminent death. You know, so when that failed, they sort of moved away from that. But now it's kind of back to that Cold War propaganda and Russia bad, while at the same time they're telling us that it's perfectly fine for entire portions of our Congress to go to Italy amidst everything that's happening in Palestine. That's totally fine. That's not evil. What's happening in Palestine and Gaza, that is not evil. So again, they begin to look cartoonish when they cannot apply the same moral standards. Because if Ukraine looked like Gaza, if Ukraine, what was done in Gaza in that time frame was done to the Ukraine, could you imagine what the American media would be saying about Vladimir Putin?
Yeah. And you know how many people have died in this? How many civilians have died in the Ukraine-Russia conflict, war, whatever we want to call it, special operation? 13,000. That's too many. 13 would be too many, obviously. We don't want anyone to die. But Candace, when we compare that to what's happening in Gaza, 88 with 16,000 children or something?
And I don't believe those numbers and those figures, because when you see the that's just... according to their, they're going to have to, they'll be digging up bodies for years. I mean, this is like, it's looking at a controlled demolition and investments that are being made and presented and we're being told that that's goodness. It doesn't make sense. And things now need to make sense. There is an honest way to get the population on your side. You can articulate what you are doing, why you are doing it, and what expectations can't, what people should or should not expect. But right now we're in a phase of calling goodness evil and evil goodness, and calling people funded when you have, like I said, all of our Congress going over to Israel, it trips. Nobody calls it into question in the mainstream media. I go to Moscow once and forget it. There must be an entire...
How about Bibi Netanyahu recently saying that the vice president of the United States, after meeting with the Iranians, reported to him? Reported.
Yes.
That's a big word. That means he works for me.
He was in the Situation Room, we learned, calling explicitly for the operation, for the war. What is going on? And then when the American response to that is, this is not nationalism, this is not what we signed up for, and we have a belief that we are being occupied, and they can't prove otherwise, that's problematic. That is going to be the priority concern. And so, you know, for me, I am just in the business of observing, being rational about what I am observing. I want for my country nationalism. That is what I want for America. That is what I want America to actually come first. And it is positively impossible to sit here and to blame the shifting perspectives in America on our own government, the sentiment that Americans hold, to then be so arrogant as to say, well, that's because of Russian propaganda. as if Americans can read Cyrillic, speak Russian.
Right.
This is all happening because of Russian propaganda. Yeah. It is to treat the Americans like we are toddlers. And that is not a good idea. It is not serving them. They should stop doing it.
You know, it's your problem. And what is fascinating about you, and I watch and read you a lot, when you get a little bit of information, you become obsessed and can't stop. And you're going to, you're going to get down to this. You're going to read everything you can. Mm-hmm. Look at every, this is you. This,
yes.
That's Candace Owens. And,
yeah.
And it's a great attribute because it's what America needs right now. And I see something in my country that is changing. I see a hunger and a thirst for people like you to give them the information they've never been allowed to get.
Yeah, and also, you are correct. I become totally obsessed about things, especially when there's such the magnitude of the lie doesn't make sense to me. When it's the magnitude and the audacity of the lie and thinking that you can just afford to tell it literally. Like,
right.
We just have enough money and power and we can tell it and we can say whatever and the rest of you guys are slaves. It makes me angry and then it focuses me on that topic. And that is something that we have been doing different. I think on our series, my podcast, rather than playing the media game, which is so ADHD, having people focus over here, it's Monday, it's Tuesday, it's Wednesday. I just want to press my thumb here for a second and really understand what this is. And typically what inspires me to do that is what I'm being lied about. So this
right.
whole like Russian conspiracy, Alexander Dugin, who I've never met, pulling the strings. And it's been completely crazy. It makes me interested. It makes me want to watch the interviews. What is it about this character that they are lying or trying to attach me to him? It's always for me a driving force and makes me look in places where I normally wouldn't be looking.
Yeah, I think you posted something this morning. I didn't get a chance to look at it all, but I think you'd mentioned something about that there's some tie between charges from Israel, that they're somehow trying to tie anti-Semitism to Russia.
Right. It was actually just on the way over here, one of my followers sent it. We had been covering this FARA filing from a company called Clock Tower X LLC.
Mm-hmm.
And they filed for FARA. They're not pretending that they're not foreign agents. It's directly from the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Israel that is controlling this organization. And they are explicit in their filings that this is about propaganda targeting American Christians and how we're going to go around and create the October 7th experience. Here are people that we deem problematic. And I had missed in this document. They explicitly stated, mind you, this was filed before I had any plans to come to Russia. That they were going to conquer their focus anti-Semitism by basically alleging that anti-Semitism comes from Russia, which, by the way, I will appreciate the irony. I'm pretty sure that the first country to recognize Israel as a nation was Russia.
Yes.
So this is this.
Yeah. But we're not allowed to know that.
We're not allowed to know that. But so that was interesting. And so they explicitly mentioned me and mentioned Tucker Carlson and saying that we were susceptible to Russian narratives. I mean, at least with Tucker, he had interviewed Vladimir Putin, something I would love to do in the interest of learning more. With me, I was like, how are you saying this? Like,
right.
I got this by watching the actions of our government, our perspectives on Zionism, and which they're now pretending is anti-Semitism more broadly, as if we hate Jewish people. Our perspectives on Israel have been shaped by Israel. And when you read through these docs and how they plan to effectively brainwash and propagandize Americans, it doesn't make us feel more compelled to support Israel. So they just cannot see themselves. They can't see themselves in this moment. And so rather than dealing with the issue in an honest way, they just blame Russia, which they do like every year.
On everything.
On every topic.
And it's okay to blame Russia and it's okay to criticize Russia. It's not okay to then not hear their point of view. For example, you know, President Putin has these news conferences where he invites CNN and the BBC and everybody, and they all pepper him with questions and they lambast him. And he sits there and takes the questions. Why don't we play that in the United States just to hear his point of view, even if we hate him and disagree with him?
Yes, I actually had watched one of those years ago, and he was able to articulate rationally what was happening in Russia. And I knew that they would never, ever, ever allow it to play in America because they have to be able to create a caricature of everyone, myself included, right? So he's supposed to be unstable, I guess, unintelligent, angry, and wanting to take over the West. And that immediately if you inject any fresh air or you allow people to get, you know, go direct and answer questions, it diminishes a caricature. It's why I'm able to effectively diminish all the lies that are told about me, because I have a platform and I'm speaking to people directly and I can show them, here's what we were doing, here's why we were doing it. I'm the one who told my audience that I was going to Russia. So if I'm an agent, a secret agent.
And you're tough. I don't know where you get it, but you're tough.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
I mean, just, in a kind way. You're not mean, but you're tough.
I just don't have any... I don't have any interest in lies. Life is short. And
you were interviewing a CNN reporter the other day. I was watching this and I laughed my butt off. I think you said something to the effect like, next question.
Yeah.
Like it's just, I don't have time for your silliness.
Well, especially I have four toddlers at home. And so I just, I can't raise kids that are pretending to be journalists and adults. So when they get whiny and fussy and needy and emotional, I'm like, I could be home. So if you have a grown adult question to ask me, I'm happy to spend time. But if you need nurturing, you need to call your mom.
Suzanne and I raised four children as well. And she's usually the one who's like that more than I am, by the way, just on a personal note. By the way, what do you make of this? All the people who've been somehow caught up or found guilty or prosecuted in Ukraine for massive corruption, mm-hmm. we're talking tens of billions of dollars that could have been lost there, have all somehow disappeared and shown up in Israel.
Well, I think that it's pretty obvious there's a tie between Israel and the Ukraine, because buried in my Farah docs, which came from the Foreign Ministry of Affairs in Israel, they had a whole section on Zelensky and Ukraine and essentially saying that it's because he's Jewish that these narratives are coming out, because their whole thrust is anti-Semitism. So these are not conspiracies. Like, these docs afforded us an opportunity to understand where these lies are coming from. And you do have to also appreciate the richness of the irony of a literal foreign agents accusing, as a part of their propaganda program, people like me and Tucker Carlson of being foreign agents when we are not accepting money from any foreign country.
Right.
Yeah, I am in cahoots with no foreign government, and our interest is purely journalistic. I am interested. I've been trying to land an interview with Putin actually for 5 years since I was at the Daily Wire. I went to them and said we should do this interview, and Tucker Carlson always scoops me. He always does it first.
So, by the way, I was just talking to him last night and he didn't know that you were here, and I told him. So he was happy.
Of course.
No, he may think you're scooping him. I'm not sure. But, you know, I love you both.
And, he's fantastic.
And I'm glad you're here. And I know he's got plans to come here as well, because he's a big fan of Russia.
I did find a nicer, even nicer grocery store than him. I did, and I filmed it so I could text it to him later when I land.
Are you pushing the little cart?
Yeah, I'm like, I have to compete with him, so I'm like, I have to find a nicer grocery store.
Did you notice when you're hanging around in Russia? This is one of the first things that struck me when I came here, and I'm really much enjoying my experience here as well. And of course, I also go home to Miami, but the Americana here is huge. You hear American music, you see American songs, you see American products. They love us.
Yeah.
They love America, and they want to be our friends, and we just constantly kick them in the teeth.
Yeah.
I feel terrible.
Yeah, I that is another illusion that I would say has been dissipated as well. They genuinely love Americans. They don't understand why there is this frost, and I want them to know that we don't understand it either.
Right.
So we're on opposite sides here, but we're all thinking the same thing. And that is being poorly reflected by our media. It is literally between our media and Russia. It is not the American people. I mean, outside of the generation Cold War, I would say we don't have those emotions that they're trying to train us to have about Russia. We recognize our problem in America is our relationship with Israel. And they just want to keep, you know, calling us anti-Semitic, calling us whatever it is, but it's not going to go away. I think the reality is really starting to manifest. And however I have contributed to that, my main mission here was a Christian mission. And it is
for
me to see, like I said, the Christian heritage, the Christian relics.
And it's strong.
It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And I want people to know that you're missing a huge part of our history. and I'm very well traveled, and I've never seen anything like it.
I call my friends when I go to church here the other Catholics, you know, because they're a little different than me, you, and George.
Yes,
they're, you know, just but it's a beautiful, mm-hmm. wonderful thing.
It is
very ritualistic, mm-hmm. also. It's fun. I want people to know or hear from you that you really are not an anti-Semite.
Yes.
That you are not a person who has anything against Jews. Mm-mm. And when you and others like Thomas Massey or Tucker Carlson or Cenk Uygur or Anna Kasparian, who you just interviewed, when they say we are angry at the Israeli government for what they've done and for their influence on our government, mm-hmm. and for controlling our money and our blood and our treasure, mm-hmm. you're not saying that as an anti-Jewish position. You're just criticizing a foreign policy of a country.
Yeah, and forget whatever country it is. You know, the mass murder of children is satanic. So I'm anti-satanic, and that telling me that I have to support that as a Christian, telling me that I have to be okay with this, or else the punishment on the other side is we're going to smear you, is completely and utterly unacceptable. It is now falling upon deaf ears. So it's not something to even, it's not even a smear that needs to be, that we need to concern ourselves with anymore, because they've just smeared too many people now. And it's childish, it's immoral. And I think it's principally going, it's proven that it's failed because it's principally untrue. And so even Jewish Americans stand against Israel.
Yes.
And they are watching my show in large numbers. I dialogue with them, they email me, they recognize that their identity being shaped by the actions of Bibi Netanyahu is a threat to them. And so there is, beneath it all, there is a coming together right now that's happening in America.
Would you call it an awakening?
Definitively a spiritual awakening that is happening in America. We're talking a lot more about Satanism. We are talking about what that means, why there are more articles written in distaste regarding Tucker Carlson and Jeffrey Epstein. I mean, that really tells us that we are getting something very wrong. We are being told that Tucker is dangerous and Bibi Netanyahu is a friend. That is so far removed from common sense that it can't stand, and it's not standing.
And there is an Epstein class, I think.
There is absolutely an Epstein class, and there is no way that they can train Americans to think differently. I think they thought that if Trump said, oh, let's forget about this, then people would move on. And they were shown how, no, not even he has the power to make people look away from this. So I am glad that the conversation is returning to a more spiritual basis.
Yeah.
I'm happy that people are contending with great evil, the great evil Satan, and recognizing that, because it means that society is going in the right direction. When you recognize that it's true evil, it's spiritual evil, it's spiritual darkness, it means that there's going to be a global awakening, a spiritual awakening. And I think that's what's happening.
That's so great to hear. You know, it's funny. I'm very disappointed in my president, not in all areas. I think he's tried to handle the Ukraine-Russia situation better than Mr. Biden, for example. But I'm very disappointed in how he's handled the Epstein situation, and very much the way he seems so beholden to Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree?
Oh, absolutely. I think everybody agrees with that. And I think it's a lesson, especially for Christians. Like, this is what happens when we place our faith in princes and principalities, as the Bible says. And so it was a hard lesson for me to learn, but I'm glad I learned it. And that's why my focus has been just renewed, and I'm now pursuing Christianity. It's why we took a family trip to Russia.
You have also been in the news, and this is a very important subject here, because you've been very critical of Brigitte Macron and Emmanuel Macron,
mm-hmm.
and your segments on that were impossible to not watch, because the research was fantastic. The points you made were illustrative and somewhat almost scandalous.
Oh, it's a scandal. There's no question about it.
Are you convinced to this day?
1,010%, made only more convinced by the lawsuit, which is not about whether or not Brigitte is a man or a woman. It was just a PR effort, and people assumed, oh, Brigitte must be suing because Candace said that she's a man. No, nope. Suing on a technicality, because I said that Brigitte stole her brother's ID, and that's accusing her of being a thief.
Yeah.
I mean, come on, come on.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
And that has been the tradition of all of the lawsuits internally inside of France, is to never sue based or pursue anything based on the substance, but to control the media apparatus so that the public thinks that you're suing on the substance and it proves that it's just not true. It's exactly the opposite. Common sense. I don't know who was advising them. A sitting president of a foreign country suing a podcaster in another country shows that there is something very true about the claims that are being made, not the opposite.
He even went to the president of the United States to ask him to call you and, you
That's
know.
Correct. I received a phone call asking me to leave the story of Brigitte alone. And that, my understanding was, that was being driven by Sergio Gore as well. So there had Brigitte.
They'll protest too much.
A little too much.
and I imagine since you filed, have they been able to do anything since that story first aired and since you first started covering that to convince you or anyone else out there that what you were saying was not true? Because I haven't seen it.
The bar is impossibly low. Like the press, which Brigitte has a lot of power in the press, where she's prepared to present blood lying, explicitly lying, because that's not what's at the center of this case. You're not suing me for saying you're a man. So obviously we don't need blood.
Right.
And by the way, we never asked for blood. We're asking for pictures from like 30 years of your life, you know, that just don't exist. It's just, you just suddenly appear as a teacher at this school. You can't produce photos. You allegedly had three children, maybe some photos of you pregnant, raising your children on family vacations. Nothing. It's just a blank space. And so it is also because of how impossibly low the bar is that people like myself and all over the world remain convinced that Brigitte Macron was in fact born a man named Jean-Michel Trognon.
Another story you've been all over is Charlie Kirk.
Yes.
And you were very fond of Charlie. You were friends.
Yes.
You guys had a wonderful working relationship. You worked for him, I think, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us about that.
It was actually my first entry into politics. I started making YouTube videos, so I started on my own. And then I met Charlie at a conference, and he hired me after I did a panel, not unlike the panel that I just did here. And, you know, we then just for 3 years traveled together, I mean, 4 times a week minimally, doing events, trying to get his name out there, trying to point USA's. I was the communications director, and then we had our Kanye moments where Kanye randomly tweeted, "I love the way Candace Owens thinks," and things sort of blew up from there. So we were just very close. There's no other way to say it. We were very close, and he's just a part of the Candace Owens story, political story.
So it's really been hard on you since he died, and I know.
And the lack of answers, I think, has been the hardest thing.
And you would like to have seen Erica Kirk come forward and be maybe a little more supportive of trying to find those answers.
It certainly seems like would have expected, not even liked. There was, I think, there is there was a base expectation there, and it's certainly not what has happened. It has been almost the opposite. I don't understand the. How the entire world realizes that there's something wrong with the story, and yet someone who can pick up the phone and call the president, the vice president, and the FBI and demand documents and answers seems altogether disinterested.
You know, one of my favorite movies is Scarface, and I think there's a line in there where the guy turns, I think it's, what was it, George Ortega or something like that, turns to Tony and says, "You know, Tony, I like you. There's no lying in you." And it's a famous line in the movie. And when I talk to you, I think of that line. When you talk to Kat, there's no lying in you. You are an honest person. You can't be anything but that. And I think that's virtuous. I think that's really important. It's one of the reasons I was looking forward to talking to you. And it's so obvious. Let me ask you a very important question, because you may have heard this, you may not have heard this, but there's a buzz out there in America that you would make a great next president of the United States. I apologize for asking, but...
No, you're fine. I always tell my listeners I'd never run for president. I'd only run for dictator, because I'm not dealing with Congress. I'm not dealing with lobbying.
Right.
I'm not dealing with any of this. I'm not dealing with Lindsey Graham calling for another war. I'm just going to be like, here's what we're doing and here's what we're not doing. So I tell them, vote for me if the terms are acceptable, that I will be dictator of the United States, and that is it. But in the short run, I really don't have an interest in running for office, because there is just too much inauthenticity. Also, the great letdown of Trump. I would be interested in strongly getting behind someone like Tucker Carlson, though. I would. And so I would love for him to run. And I would create the dynamic that me and Charlie had and run all over to help him get elected, because he...
And Tucker was also very fond and friendly with Charlie Kirk.
he was.
Both of you
and
were.
To see him be one of the lone voices, I would also say Megyn Kelly, who told the truth about Charlie shifting perspectives toward the end.
Yes.
Just only further committed me to the, and he's also at a great place in his life. His children are older. I would gratefully get behind someone like Tucker Carlson.
Was it simply coincidental that after Charlie Kirk started being critical of Israel and some very prominent representatives of Israel in the United States met with him, soon after that he perished?
You know, something that I like to do is just play common sense games. You know, why do you think it was that Vladimir Putin did not feel the need to issue a statement within 48 hours and say, I did not kill Charlie Kirk? What an unusual thing to feel the need to do.
Oh, Netanyahu.
Yeah, to come out on the news and to explicitly state that you did not kill someone.
Yeah.
That
yeah.
seems a bit strange, right?
Yeah, and, he, and Netanyahu
someone,
did
quite,
that.
Quite a
yeah.
busy guy to do that.
Yeah.
To be the person who tweeted that he was dead before the President of the United States. That
right.
seems a bit involved. But, you know, we'd be veering toward conspiracy, you know, toward conspiracy to note these very strange actions that the state of Israel took, the posting of the AI flag of Charlie holding, that was all quite bizarre. It was almost as if to say, obviously, don't look here. Don't look here. And then, of course, the subsequent lies, which we were able to unpack, to demonstrate as people were insisting he never once moved one inch. And then it turns out, no, actually, the night before he died, he tweeted.
Yeah.
I mean, he wrote to his close friends that he had abandoned the pro-Israel cause. So to me, there's never a reason to lie unless you are covering something up. That's not to me, that's common sense. Why do people lie? To cover up a truth. That is the only reason people ever lie. So the question is, what truth is being covered up about Charlie Kirk's death?
If Tucker runs, would you be in his administration in some capacity, or would you think about it?
If he ran, he'd have to consider me. I think my husband's probably more well-suited to that.
George for VP.
Yeah, he would definitely
be. We need a Catholic in the White House.
We do need a Catholic in the White House. And also, in terms of the way that my life runs, I love to communicate. I love what I do.
Yeah.
I love being passionate about things.
Yeah.
And the back office stuff and figuring out how to build an empire and how to run things is all my husband. So
yeah,
he's more well suited. But I could be press secretary.
There you go. You communicate.
Tucker, if this ever happens, please have me. I'm pitching myself.
And I'll be your sidekick in Spanish. I'll talk to people in Spanish and be able to
Here
do it
are.
In both languages.
Yes.
And so many people in America. You are just delightful. Thank you so much. You've been so gracious with your time.
Thank you.
It's great to see you here. And I think it's courageous of you to visit other countries and see other cultures and not believe the BS that says don't go there because of whatever.
Right.
And I think that we as Americans need to do more of this.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be more expansive. You know, there's a whole global South community out there, India, China, the Persian Gulf countries, Russia, Iran to a certain extent. And we should be having contact with these people, even if we disagree with them. And
mm-hmm.
that's why it's important for people like you to do what the CNNs and the BBCs and the Foxes and the NBCs, and in many cases, the New York Times of the world don't do.
Right.
So congratulations and thank you.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. And thank you for having me.
You're so wonderful. Thank you so much. Thank you for your time.
You're really. Welcome.
Yeah. And what a show, right? You know, we promise you that we will always bring you different perspectives. And one of the things that you guys always say, and you write to us every week, is that you appreciate the fact that you can get information here that you don't get in the United States. In other words, if I was working right now, as I used to, for CNN, or if I was working right now, as I used to, for Fox, or if I was working right now, as I used to, for NBC, I couldn't have this conversation with her. And if I did, it would have to be antagonistic. And why would I have to have an antagonistic conversation with Candace Owens when she has so much information to share? So this is why I think we do this, and this is why you're so gracious and so kind to appreciate and tell us that you appreciate what we do. And by the way, tell me what I did wrong too. That's cool. That's fine. So for all of you who are watching this, there's 20 million people of you right there out there today who are watching, and I want to thank you, whether you're on Spotify or you're on YouTube or you're on X or on BitChute or wherever you are. Thank you. And as I always like to say at the end of the show, Thank you so much for letting us into your homes. I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'll be seeing you next time.